Our perfect little farming family has been overrun with tiny monsters that are shooting poison spikes and biting everyone in sight, mate.
Yeah, they are.
They want our meats, bro. It's time for us to stand up and fight for our dreamy American farmland lifestyle.
Right.
Cletus, fetch me my boomstick. The critters are everywhere.
Do you know what I love about that?
Go on.
The idea that there is some redneck out there going, Cletus, fetch me my boomstick.
Cletus, fetch me my boomstick.
Cletus?
These darn raccoons are back.
Critters, baby.
Critters, baby. Speaking of how they want our meats, though, bro.
Right.
This episode is brought to us by JL Butchers.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
Shock and awe.
Shock and awe, especially
shock
from me.
And awe from
I
you.
I didn't know this.
This isn't faux.
This isn't faux.
This
what?
Isn't faux. Much like the meats available from JL Butchers, they're all very real.
I mean, legitimately, they are real meat.
They are real meat.
JL Butchers, it's real meat.
It's real meat. That should be the tagline.
Right.
But they've won a bunch of awards. They sent me 200 quid's worth of sausages.
Too much sausages.
It's way too much sausage. I worked my way through 18 of them. 18 sausages. And right. I was like, these are delicious.
Right.
Also, I think I might die. And then the last two sausages I cooked off and I've been sort of nibbling like a weird... massive. These sausages are fucking huge, mate.
They're huge. They're hench. They're like a baby's arm.
Yeah.
It's like Ron Jeremy sausages.
Literally. That's exactly what it is. They should be called RJ Butchers for Ron Jeremy.
Ron Jeremy Butchers. Yeah.
Coming in you.
Shall we start the show?
Sure. I'm Ben Groves.
I'm Rob McFarlane.
And welcome to the Every Movie Ever Podcast. How are we doing, bud?
Yeah, I'm good. I am busier than a two-twatted hooker. Two-twatted hooker. That'd be a great t-shirt. Just my face and then just the words two-twatted hooker. No context.
I think
no show branding.
I say remove it further. Put it in Braille.
Put it in Braille.
Less context.
There's not enough Braille t-shirts
there's
out
no
there.
There's no Braille t-shirts.
Here's my question about Braille.
Go on.
When you go to like an attraction, like a zoo, and there's Braille on the sign... How do they know where the sign is and that there's Braille on it?
You have to follow. So
do they just touch everything?
No, they have Braille on the path and you can feel it with your feet.
It's like
a Princess and the Pea type thing.
That's not real. So when they're at crossings, it's just,
Yeah.
Just to indicate danger.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah, fair. That's
fair.
Why it's all knobbly.
Yeah, busy, bud. How are you?
I'm really busy. I'm doing a lot of research into Braille.
Right, okay. I can tell because you've got sunglasses on right now, Ben. And I thought I was doing a podcast with a rapper.
No, but it turns out
I'm doing a podcast with a blind man.
Yeah.
So this is literally...
All right.
I didn't know Stevie Wonder was on the show this week,
This works out perfectly. I have my glasses somewhere, but I don't know where.
Right.
I had them when I left my house.
Right.
I don't have them when I get here.
Right.
They're not in the car.
So you're just wearing sunglasses.
These are prescription.
Okay, dude,
this is the wordiest episode I've written in months. It's just a fucking essay. So I need glasses.
Right.
I don't have glasses.
Right, okay.
Unfortunately, you're just going to have to put up with how fucking cool I am.
Right,
for
right.
For this one.
Okay. If you start singing, Isn't She Lovely, I'm off. All right, that's all I'm
saying.
She
is, though. She
is lovely.
She is lovely.
Speaking of lovely, we've got another host this week.
We do.
Bear the Toy Poodle.
Who's
currently curled up between us.
Yeah, buddy.
Because I'm dog sitting. And if there are interruptions, blame them on him.
No, don't. Because no blame will ever fall on this tiny baby angel.
Don't blame it on the sunshine. Don't blame it on the moonlight.
Blame it on the tiny poodle.
Blame it on the doogie.
Blame it on the doogie.
Yeah, I tried.
Jesus.
I tried. Look, it's mostly
Braille,
the same letters, all right?
Yeah.
What are we doing? Come on, hit us with it.
Right, we are diving into this little $2 million budget 1986 cult classic creature feature B-movie gem.
Massive genre.
It's a wide berth. It's a populated area. We're trying to work our way through it little bit by little bit.
One bite at a time.
Yeah. And as usual, we're giving our famous go fucking watch it spoiler warning. None of you are going to listen. That's fine.
We have to do our bit.
There's no excuse now. The film's been out for 1,000 years. Get it fucking in you.
And now we're going to tell you exactly what happens in this film for 2 minutes before we get into talking about it, so you know what we're talking about, all
exactly.
right? Because none of you are going to watch it.
No.
Would you like me to read the act titles? Because you've written this one.
I've put act titles back in because I love them. Go for it. You do first and third.
Act one. Intergalactic jailbreak.
Yeah.
Somewhere deep in space. A bunch of ravenous little bastards known as Krites escape from an alien prison asteroid, because apparently space jail ain't what it used to be.
Not back in my day.
Nah. The hungry Krites hijack a ship and head straight for Earth. Why? Fuck you, that's why.
Yeah.
We're delicious and these guys are hungry.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, on a peaceful Kansas farm, the Brown family is living their best small town life. That's actually their surname. He's not being racist.
It's not an adjective.
Blissfully unaware that their home is about to become a buffet. Buffet in there.
Yeah.
Two shape-shifting alien bounty hunters are sent after the Krites, armed with big guns and bigger hair.
Yeah. Act two, dinner time. Spoiler, your dinner. The Krites crash land near the Browns' farm and waste no time turning livestock and electronics into chew toys. They're small, round, and absolutely nightmare-fueled. Imagine if a Furby went feral for amphetamines.
They are that. They're crack Furbies. Yeah,
they're crack Furbies.
Yeah.
And I fucking love them.
They're like, hey, mate, I'll suck you off for a fiver.
Literally. Literally. With my three rows of teeth.
I've had worse.
As the Brown family realizes something very wrong is going on, like being chomped on by Psychos. I need my glasses, man.
Alfred Hitchcock, Psycho.
As the Brown family realizes something very wrong is going on, like being chomped on by sarcastic fur bastards, the bounty hunters finally arrive, trashing bars, confusing everyone, and blowing stuff up in a totally non-helpful way. Chaos, as you'd expect, ensues.
Chaos always does, though. It's like that. The number of times I've heard about chaos ensuing.
Have you never had preemptive chaos and then peace ensues?
No, I have. It's peace never ensues. It's always chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos puts the work in, man. Fair. Act three, fur flies and explosions.
Yeah, I tried to work some of that. I just got lazy.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Fur flies and people die.
That would be better.
There we go.
Do that one.
But no, fur flies and explosions.
Yeah, go back to the shitter one. Thank you.
With the help of the bounty hunters, the Browns fight back, setting traps and trying not to get devoured by what are essentially demonic hairballs with teeth. The Krites attempt to flee in their ship, but not before kidnapping the family's daughter. Rude. Just when things look bleak, the family is saved thanks to the last-minute heroics, a conveniently placed bomb, and the Krites' own incompetence.
Yeah.
As their ship explodes in the sky, the bounty hunters rebuild the Browns' house and fly off, leaving the Browns with a story that no one will believe. Do you know what, Ben? Not only was this breakdown one of the best you've ever written.
Thank you.
It covers everything that happens in the film.
Thank you.
Is very accurate, but also funny and insightful.
Thank you.
And has actually added to a point I'm going to make later.
I thought it might.
Thank you.
So come on, give me your first reactions to this. When did you watch it? How has it lived with you since your first watch? And give me your favorite likes and dislikes about the film.
Right, okay. Well, in the distant past of 48 hours ago when I first watched this film.
That I'm fucking talking to. Right. This is like a Star Wars opening.
Yeah, it is, yeah. In the distant past of the 48-hour trade war that I've just come back from.
Yeah.
About tariffs. Oh, yeah. No, that's too topical. Damn you, yeah. George Lucas. You preempted the future. yeah, I only watched this 2 days ago, and it's good. It's good. It was one of those things I always saw.
Wait, 2 days ago was your first watch?
Yes, ever. I've never seen it before.
Oh, my God.
Okay. This is why when you're like, all the three films you suggested, I was like, I've not seen any of them. Mm-hmm. And they've been on my to-do list since the age of about 12, because they were one of the many films that were placed as a trailer on the VHS before films I did have.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, Critters, that kind of, it was like Critters 4. Is that the one where they're in space?
The one where they're in space.
Yeah, I mean, that
Critters
did let me.
Critters 4 is like essentially, it's just porn without the sex.
Ooh.
I know, it's my perfect porn.
Amazing. Yeah, it's like McDonald's, food without the nutrition.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. It focuses on all of the story and doesn't care whether you come or not. It's amazing.
So no, I've only saw it 2 days ago, but it's been one of those ones. I was aware of it. It was heavily advertised to me as a child. Mm-hmm. It's not great. It's
none taken.
It's fun. It's functional. Mm-hmm. It does the job.
Okay.
I don't know what my rating's going to be by the end of this. I've watched the film, mm-hmm. and like you often say to me, I could have researched it, but I wanted my mate who actually likes the film to tell me this stuff. So. We're going to have to see what this rating is. It's going to depend heavily on how you sell it me.
All right. So how has it lived with you for the last 2 days? Since your first watch, how has Critters affected your day-to-day life?
Well, I think it might be the most prescient, insightful...
Prescient.
Mm-hmm. Knows about the, how the future is going to be.
Yeah, I knew that. I just thought, just in case I listened.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. It's insightful before the fact.
Yeah.
I think this might be a shocking and very real takedown of a very real crisis that's happening in America right now. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
All right.
It was good. I liked the critters.
Yeah.
I thought they were really cute. I want one.
Right.
Did
you have a favorite death?
It was critter deaths. My favorite critter death.
Yeah.
Is the one that just gets shotgunned and turned into paste.
Yeah.
It was because it was just so like standard.
Yeah.
Just got turned it. It got fragged.
Yeah.
By a mum with a shotgun.
Yeah.
And then just got, looked like somebody had spilt like a jar of jam.
Not just a mum. This is the mum.
The mum.
This is the mum from E.T.
Right.
It's the mum in Critters.
Yeah. I also like the fact that this film very heavily shits on E.T. Because I never liked E.T. He always terrified me. He's a ball bag with eyes that's desperate to get touch kids and get on the telephone.
Oh, God. That's kind of true.
Right. And
Spielberg.
I just, right, exactly. Okay. It's a long proboscis finger with a light on the end. Just touch it. Just touch it a little bit. Just give it a little touch, Jimmy.
Wildly off topic.
Right.
There's a theme park in Japan with an ET ride in it.
Right.
And you have to, you scan it like a passport.
Right.
That you have to fill your name out in. Mm-hmm. Now, bear in mind, I'm probably one of three white guys in the entire theme park. So you get onto a bicycle, which is on this little ride.
Right.
The bicycle's terrifying because every single one has an ET that its head moves to look at you when it talks. So it turns and looks at you and then no mouth movement. It's like, what the fuck is happening? And because everything is in Japanese, I understood basic.
Yeah, yeah.
Not theme park safety instructions.
Did they not cover that on Duolingo?
Dude, it was terrifying.
Is there not a Duolingo module for ET theme park?
I wish there was. It would have saved me. But you sit on this little bicycle, and as the ride starts, it sort of rallies off everyone's name, like roll call sheet. So it was like, Naoki, Eri, Ben, Shinji. And you're like, everyone sort of stops and goes,
White guy.
White name? White name. And I've also got this tiny little fucking plastic ET going, Ben. Just twisting. Ben. Scared the shit out of me. It was horrible. Right, sorry. Okay. But you saying that brought back weird memory.
There we go. Yeah. So this is how I view ET.
Okay.
It's that experience with like a little ball bag alien just going, just touch the tip.
Just the tip. You tiny boy, give me more sweets.
Right. Oh. So there's a scene in this where the critters shit mix a stuffy ET.
Yeah.
And I'm like, mint.
Yeah.
Mint. So that's probably my favourites from this film.
Okay. I've got a theory about this because they're both based on a similar thing.
Oh.
Kind of.
Oh, okay.
Kind of. I watched this before I watched Gremlins.
Right.
So obviously researching this, there was loads of people being sort of like,
it's Gremlins.
It's a shit at Gremlins. And it's like, it's not though, buddy.
It's not.
But we'll get into
it. It's very different.
Yeah, it is different. It's unfairly compared. Since I was a kid, this has lived with me in a way where I feel like I'm prepared if I'm ever caught out in a tiny farmhouse in bumfuck nowhere in America.
Okay.
I feel like I'm prepped.
I'd argue that my later point will prove you right.
Okay.
I mean, that you are prepared.
Oh.
You've got priors.
Thanks.
We all have.
Yeah.
All right.
I think my favorite thing about this is how sarcastic and witty the critters are. By a mile. There's like... The one on the porch where one gets blown away on the porch.
Yeah.
The other one sort of glances down and goes, fuck, and then rolls
away.
It's
so good.
It's incredible.
Right?
It is incredible.
What a perfectly placed F-bomb. It's not said. No. It's just a word on the screen.
Yeah, exactly. It's all subtitles. And you get these sort of like really sarcastic off-the-cuff comments in subtitles from these little alien bastards that are running around just trying to eat.
You know when you hang out with a group of new people and you're not really sure of your footing? And there's, I think we're these people now, because this doesn't happen to me anymore.
Okay.
But it used to happen to me a lot as a kid, that I'd join a group of people, and one of them would be, you were this, when we were at uni, you were this.
Okay.
Funnier than me, and a cunt with it. Right? So I'd join the group, and I'd be like, oh, blah, 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 and you'd be like, nice shoes, dickhead, but you do something hilarious that got the whole group laughing, and I'm just like, this fucking guy... The critters would be that guy in any group.
Yeah.
And I agree. Only now that I say this that I've realized that doesn't happen anymore, which means it must be me.
Yeah. But I think, do you know what I think it is though?
Right.
I think you care less now.
Mm.
When I met you in uni, I think you were very well manicured. You were very sensitive, very curated.
Very insecure.
But whereas now, yeah. Look at you, you beautiful blossoming flower.
Oh, babe.
You're all on it. I feel like you're a different Rob.
I mean, you can't see me, so that helps.
I can see you.
Can you?
In Braille.
In Braille. Is this... Oh, I know what's happening.
Go on.
You know in The Matrix where he just sees the code? You're just seeing the Braille.
That's what it is.
Everything's rendered in Braille.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm dodging Braille bullets in slow-mo. You just can't see it because you're not blind.
Bang.
Slow move bullet. Slow move bullet.
When they read horror books, they're like, oh, that's a scary feeling.
Fright. Oh, I didn't see that one coming.
Oh, we're better than that.
What?
We're better than
that. Oh my God. I didn't even mean that. No. Hold me out. Hold me out. Hear me out. Hear me out.
Just the tip.
Just the tip.
Ben, we've gone.
All right,
we've gone.
Fuck this. I'm giving us some context for critters.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
This is just the tip of the episode. We're going to get deeper. All right.
Okay.
Three new line ident cards right off the rip. It was like,
they were really proud of this one.
Revisiting this, I was like, oh, it's new line. Mm-hmm. I wonder who else is involved. Oh, it's new line, but now red. I wonder who else is involved. Oh, it's new line.
Yeah, but now it's simple.
And I was, at some point, they must have just gone, the design department were like, which one is getting the approval? And everyone's like, Critters is about to be released. It's going to break the world.
Let's A-B test it. Let's see which one people remember.
Yeah. All three. The red one. Stick with the red one. The red one's mint. But anyway, three ident cards is a mint idea. Because A, not only does it... Because people never pay attention to that shit. It looks like there's way more people involved than there is.
They're like, oh, this is a professional production.
Wow, this is a lot of money. So, from three companies?
Mm-hmm.
These are the days when New Line Cinema were like a mom and pop studio. Like a small-time distributor. They had like a handful of great releases that weren't big, big yet.
Well, yeah, because I mean, I'd say New Line's only real contribution to cinema is the Lord of the Rings trilogy, right?
That's fucking outrageous that you would say that to me face to face.
Yeah.
Whilst looking at
I'd look you directly in the sunglasses
you
and
look at
say
me
the
directly
only thing.
In the shaded eye and saying that Lord of the Rings is the best one. Cunt, for a start.
Okay.
No.
No? Okay, what else? What else have they done?
Okay.
Name anything good New Line of
Pink, Pink Flamingos.
Okay, yeah, mint.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mint.
The Street Fighter.
Mint.
Return of the Street Fighter.
Not as mint.
It is as mint. It is as mint. I'll die on this fucking hill.
All right.
Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, mint film.
The Evil Dead.
Okay, yeah, fair.
See?
Fair.
Extro.
Which, what?
Extro.
Yeah, that's
the really cheap British B movie where like the kids.
Don't shame me for not knowing Extro.
The kid throws a stick at the sky and then the sky turns into night and it turns out that he's fucked up aliens.
Ben, don't make out like this is some sci-fi classic that everyone knows.
Everyone knows Extro, right?
Okay, do they?
Grow up.
You're being a bit extra about this, mate.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Nightmare on Elm Street. 1 and 2 were released before Critters.
Wow, what's the guy in that... What's he called again?
Freddy. This is the house that Freddy built.
Freddy Flintoff.
Sure. No.
Freddy Mercury.
Who the fuck is Freddy Flintoff?
Freddy Mercury.
No.
Freddy Starr.
Freddy Starr?
Freddy Starr.
Is that the shit comedian from... Is that the British comedian?
I think so, yeah.
Who just... said... The newspaper ran an article on him once.
Freddy Starr ate my hamster.
Yeah,
that's
what the
all
fuck?
I know.
You're a twat. Okay, no, not Freddy Starr.
Five Nights.
No, get in the bin.
Or not.
Freddy or not. In the bin.
Breck.
Fuck off. Freddy Breck.
Freddy Krueger. All right.
Freddy Krueger. Nightmare on Elm Street. 1 and 2 were released before Critters.
What?
New Line were like small. They were taking gambles on like small budget horror and exploitation movies. This is like their bread and butter at this point.
Yeah,
right?
You say that, but they had already worked with Johnny Depp, so they were huge, mate. Had they?
Yeah. Johnny Depp's.
Was he in the first or second?
First. That was his feature debut. Nice. Nightmare on Elm Street 1.
There we go. No one knew what he was going to be.
Yeah, it's good.
A man with a poo in his bed.
Yeah, I know, right? He never heard that one coming.
Oh!
Should have learnt Braille. So they signed on to distribute Critters. based on the success of Gremlins, right? They saw Gremlins take off and make, you know, hundreds of millions.
You know, when we did The Last Starfighter and we're like, this is the studios, we should have our own Star Wars. This is, we should have our own Gremlins.
So Critters was being shopped around before Gremlins.
Right, okay. No one wanted it until Gremlins came along and proved that this exact film will do quite well, actually.
Because everyone was like, little tiny monsters aren't a massive threat. And then Gremlins came along and everyone was like, want a piece of that.
Right, okay.
Want a piece of that.
Merchandising,
so,
what?
Yeah, exactly.
These are incredibly easy to mass produce.
Exactly. Right. The Chiodo brothers have made puppets that you can set in 6 hours. Let's let's do that instead of horrendously expensive latex things. Is that a point we're going to get into later? Maybe. Possibly. I don't know. I do know.
I do know. I can see it.
Shh. It's just the tip. They signed on to distribute Critters based on the success of Gremlins, and even though these two are compared, unfairly so,
right?
Because they're wildly different.
They are wildly different.
Gremlins is Don't Get Him Wet. This one's is Space Prisoners. You know what I mean?
Well, no, I tell you what the big difference is, and it does make a big difference, especially to my later point. Gremlins is your own fault, right? Mm. Gremlins is you fucked around, you found out.
Yeah, yeah.
This is... something is happening to you that's outside of your control.
Yeah.
This is an external threat. Gremlins is an internal threat.
Ooh.
Right? One is fear of yourself, one is fear of the other.
I do frighten myself sometimes. I like that.
There we go.
With a budget of $2 million, this little teeny tiny B movie sci-fi horror comedy grows into be an enormous hidden gem, gain a massive cult following.
Yeah.
Spawns 3 sequels. A web series and a reboot.
I feel like you say that as if this came out, it was a massive hit and it had all of that in a 5-year period because the world went Critters crazy. And I need to provide the context that this is over the 30 years since then.
Okay.
They've drip fed bits of Critters to see if there's still an audience for it.
There is. The 3 sequels came pretty immediate because they were like, this is, it made 13 million at the box office. Great. Made even more in the VHS market, which I'm about to get into.
Lovely.
But the web series came as sort of like a test the waters fandom type thing. And then the reboot was, is there something here? And then one of the producers, is it Rupert or Robert? One of the producers.
Doesn't matter what his name is. He's just a producer.
Rupert Harvey.
Okay.
I had to scroll down once. Rupert Harvey came out.
That's why you listen to us, because we put that extra effort in.
That was a lot of effort.
Exactly.
I had to stop stroking our third host.
Never stroke the second one anymore, though, do you?
Nope. Just the tip.
Just the tip. Just the tip.
I hate this. Let's explore Critters. Let's get into it. Right. So sci-fi, horror comedy, B movies. It's a massive market, huge demand, loads of films in it. Obvious sarcasm.
Yes.
I'm going to get into
it. It's a minor hit. It makes a bit of money. They try and make some more.
Yes. It's essentially what it is.
Yes.
So, horror comedy. Huge boom in the 1980s. And I think it's down to a few factors. Horror evolved from sort of serious, very standard set rules, right?
I feel like 70s horror, the goal of most 70s horror is to upset and disturb you. And I feel like the 80s takes a step back away from that kind of shock jockey, we're going to get in your feelings and this film is going to linger with you.
Yes.
And it's kind of personified by the shift from Evil Dead to Evil Dead 2.
I agree.
Evil Dead is very much a 70s horror and Evil Dead 2 is much more of an 80s horror. In my kind of outsider understanding of things, that feels like the buckets they fall into.
I'll agree with you almost 100%. I'm 98% there. I'd say that Evil Dead 1 has this premise of a 70s horror movie.
Yes.
But the charm of an 80s movie. Because Bruce Campbell is...
Did it at the time, though, because it was devastating for its era.
Yeah. It was banned and all this crazy shit. But Bruce Campbell's Bruce Campbell. And he's charming no matter what's going on around him, you know what I mean?
He is, but he's so much more of a final girl in that first one. He's so much more scared and startled and out of his depth. Whereas Evil Dead 2, he's like, hey!
I'm going to dance with the moose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 100%.
And then I feel like that cultural shift is reflected really well in those two films. The 80s does seem to have that comedic element to horror.
Exactly. So I think it's become like horror has evolved to be more appealing and more palatable.
A bit broader, like a
wider audience, broader audience. Writers and filmmakers are getting more creative. They're getting a little bit looser with the rules of what constitutes a horror movie.
Yeah, it's entered its experimental era.
Exactly.
You know?
And I think the experimental era, which is fantastic that you've just brought that into it, the experimental era is down to the fucking boom in the VHS market, because now distributors
and
producers can go, if it doesn't do great at the box office,
it'll do great on rentals and sales.
It'll do fucking mint on rentals and sales.
Yeah.
This is where, like, so you get this sort of false sense of security. You get like a security net underneath most box office releases now.
Well, there's a very famous Matt Damon quote, isn't there, about the decline of DVD sales, where he's talking about his Liberace movie Behind the Candelabra.
Yeah.
He's asked why. I don't necessarily think that this is 100% of the reason. A lot of film people go, well, the reason the film is different is because of streaming, because the DVD would prop up weird films. And I'm like, that's part of it. And Matt Damon's right to say that that's part of it.
Sure.
I think it's an opinion that comes from a guy who was used to the VHS market.
Yeah.
The VHS market, that was very, very true.
Yeah.
You could finance a film entirely based on its VHS sales.
Yeah.
I don't think studios were still doing that to the same degree with DVD. It was a much wider, and I think it's a much wider reason why films, because great films do come out. We just don't go see them.
I'm trying.
We're trying. But as a society, we're not.
No.
I feel like we've moved on from the cinema as a place a lot socially.
It's a shame though, man.
Welcome to the new world.
I hate this.
Right.
What happened to when we were kids and you used to go to a room to do a thing and everyone did the same fucking thing?
People will not go outside for love nor money. Whether it's to the cinema or a gig, I can sit on my sofa and I can get some of this experience at home. And I don't have to put any trousers on.
But I mean, theoretically, you don't have to do that in public. It's just preferred that you do.
So I feel like, with Matt Damon's point about DVD sales propping things up, I think it's a lot more that I have to put my trousers on factor that stops people going to the cinema. In the 80s, the only way to see a film was at the cinema until VHS came out and went, you know those trousers you don't like putting on?
Yeah.
And so it was a huge amount of money into the industry that would have funded films like this. You're totally right.
Turn a massive profit. So if we really look at the 80s growth in this niche little subgenre, we can kind of thank Cold War culture for the 80s.
Ben, you're not bringing up the Cold War. No, you're not bringing up. I don't even know what it is.
I'm into this. I've done my research.
You've done. Okay, what was the Cold War, Ben?
Winter. The nuclear arms race in the 80s. Everyone was paranoid. There was sort of misinformation everywhere. Everyone was panicking that, you know, they were going to hear a boom outside the window.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, we're thrown into a 100-year nuclear winter.
Yeah, okay, you're not wrong.
So it was rising, you know, like escalations between America and Russia and all this.
Oh, of course. We've watched Oppenheimer.
I'm in it.
He's learning.
I'm getting this. So we can thank the Cold War culture of the 80s for this booming sort of particularly Critters-esque movies.
Right, yeah.
Because people are opting to watch these weird sci-fi horror comedies where it pits small town regular people up against the invaders with futuristic weapons and evil ideologies.
The communists. Yeah.
It's like how to survive a hostile invasion when you're in buttfuck nowhere USA. The threat of nuclear war, an unseen evil that could attack at any moment.
It's Red Dawn with Patrick Swayze, isn't it?
This is it.
But with one step removed to little aliens.
And now you're making it a little bit fun and a little bit, it's not so reality facing, it's more reality adjacent.
Reality effacing.
Just the tip.
Why is he turning into Goldmember?
I don't know. I don't know where this voice is coming from, but I'm enjoying it.
Okay.
And it's not stopping.
Okay.
So this is sort of like a little cathartic relief in the form of a goofy horror comedy B-movie. And what a fucking wonderful way to spend an evening in front of the VCR when all you've got outside your window is America and Russia yelling at each other, I've got a bigger fucking missile than you, mate!
See, I'm gonna disagree with you fully here, Ben.
Go on.
I think you've made some good points.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 80s. It's Reagan. Mm-hmm. They're in the middle of the Cold War.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fear of the outsider.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But I think what this film is actually about is a crisis that wouldn't happen for another 30 years.
Okay.
I think this film tells the future.
I'll agree.
Because the critters are deceptively fun.
Yeah.
They're kind of cute. They're enjoyable.
Yeah.
At first, you're like, oh, this is mint. They've got this insatiable hunger.
Mm-hmm.
They're always needing. There's this need. And they affect the community really quickly.
Okay.
There's no infrastructure in this community to deal with it. The town's isolated. The characters are left to fend for themselves without adequate public health infrastructure. They take the children. They take the young ones first. And how do they attack, Ben? With needles. Critters is a devastating insight into how rural communities are torn apart by the opioid crisis. The critters are heroin and fentanyl, and the bounty hunters are the often callous, uninformed law enforcement who come into these communities and devastate them, often harming innocents in their pursuit of catching the people that are dealing these horrible drugs.
Are you trying to win a drug vote? Like, what's happening? Are you trying to sway dealers and fent addicts to vote for Rob McFarlane?
Yes.
Okay.
I figured they're the only community that are going to believe me. Because I can easily motivate them to vote. Just a bit of fent.
By being a critter.
By being a critter.
So you look at critters and you go, I could do this better.
Right.
Okay,
these critters are doing a really good job terrorizing this rural community.
Yeah.
But they're not fentanyl, are they?
They're not. Right? No. They're not fent.
Right, exactly.
They're just injecting poison. Sick.
I don't think I'm a million miles away. But then
I'll agree.
Here's the problem is I've in the episode, I've persuaded myself that I'm wrong and you're right. Because A, what did I say earlier? This is an external threat.
Mm-hmm.
I think gremlins probably is the larger
It's eating analog, us from the inside.
Eating you from the inside.
Your choices.
Take this, but be careful with it.
Yeah.
Oops, I wasn't. Now I live in chaos.
Yeah.
Now I'm sucking off a guy behind a bin.
Oh, my days.
I mean, that's Tuesday, but yeah.
That is. That's an easy Tuesday. Tuesday.
I look at these films and I go, this is, you know, we're in America.
Yeah.
America loved talking about themselves in their movies through removes. I feel like if we were going to reboot Critters,
they have.
Was it about Fent? Was it an allegory for Fent? See, it should have been.
Okay.
Maybe it would have succeeded more if it was telling a story about the contemporary threat to American life.
Are you sponsored by dentists? What's happening?
No, here's what it is. Here's what it is. I went to the dentist for the first time in nearly 10 years.
And they asked you to stop doing
the other day. And I was bricking it. The last time I went to the dentist, I had to be under general anesthetic because I'm so phobic. But I went in for a checkup and they're like, you're fine. You just need two fillings. We'll get them done.
Okay. That's really good.
It's a sign that nature is healing. Because for the longest time, when I was living like a bell end, I didn't go to the dentist because I'm like, well, it's fucked, isn't it? It's too late. There's nothing to do. It's just bad.
Just need to accept it.
I'm just going to be a toothless...
I'm Rob the Gummy Hobo now. Right,
exactly. That's where my head was. I was like, that's just what I'm going to be.
Yeah.
And that's what I deserve. And recently, I'm like, no, I'm going to get to that dentist.
I would have commended you for committing to the bit. Like, that would be the longest standing magic trick you ever pulled off. Now you see him 10 years later.
No, you don't.
No, you don't. That's good then, man. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
This
babe.
Is all steps forward. And we'll tackle the fent at a later date.
Yeah.
This is the quintessential American story.
Of course it is, because it's what I'm saying. They talk about themselves.
Yeah, they do.
Every
talk
bit
about
of
themselves.
Media is about what they're going on about. The reboot should have been about fent. Continue.
Maybe. It's a fucking small farming family in the middle of America. It's the nuclear family.
It is.
It's the living the small town American dream.
Yeah.
And everyone's happy. And everyone's loving life. You know what I mean? All of a sudden, you're under attack from enemies of the state. Foreign invaders are here to feast on your peaceful way of life.
Right.
They're here to take your meat and your job.
All 200 of
your sausages. All 200 sausages.
Are gone.
Then 18 of them are gone. Two of them I'm nibbling on like a fucking elongated jerky at the minute. It's not a slog because it's delicious, but also... I'm so full of sausage. It's unreal.
Not for the first time.
That's a Tuesday. 80s B-movie horror is fucking rife with this quasi-xenophobic coded sub-story set in Cold War
Reagan.
Era America. Fuck you, I'm British. I don't care. But it's true to history. This story is just as resonant today as it is back then. Everyone's scared of losing their fucking... small, perfect, idealistic way of life to the fucking enemy of the state. And if it's not Russia, it's China. If it's not China, it's fucking aliens.
Or if it's it's just people from over there, right?
Yeah.
It's the same thing we saw with Dracula in 1930.
Exactly.
People from
man.
Somewhere else are coming to take what's here.
Yeah.
Is a reptilian fear that horror can always lean on.
Yeah, yeah. This is Rupert Harvey, the producer. Brian gave me Critters to read, and I loved it. It was an archetypal American story about foreigners invading the homeland. It's quite prescient given the current state of politics in America.
Did he just say prescient?
Yeah.
Yeah!
This is why I pulled it up earlier.
Eey.
And I didn't know how to pronounce it, so thank you for that one.
There you go.
I still mispronounced it. There was this quintessentially American setup with this almost pioneering family struggling through adversity to come out the other side. And if that doesn't set up the perfect story, no wonder this did 13 million at the box office in 86.
Right.
Tiny little fur balls rolling about, fucking flinging poison spikes at farmers. He just wants to go bowling. It's all he wants to do.
Do you know, I was so surprised when I watched this film, completely unaware of what happened in it two days ago.
Yeah.
And there is so much, like, there's a writing thing called Chekhov's gun, right?
Yeah.
And Chekhov's gun is that you show something to the audience. Mm-hmm. You then let some time pass. You remind the audience that the thing is there.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the third instance, the thing is used. You see, You shoot them, right? You see it all the time. When you have a bit of exposition at the start of a film, you'll be reminded about it at the beginning of the second act. Mm-hmm. And then you'll finally see it in the third act. So this film goes, the dad goes bowling.
Yeah.
The critters are round and they roll everywhere.
Yes.
Then in the second act,
you're
reminded about the bowling alley because the bounty hunters are at the bowling alley.
Plus the team are trying to get in touch with the dad who's not shown up to the tournament that he's been chatting about the entire fucking night.
At any point in this film, does a critter roll down a lane of a bowling alley?
No, not once. No.
I got to the end credits. I was like, did I miss something? Like, I skipped back. I was like, was I texting? What the fuck?
Yeah.
No.
It's amazing, isn't it?
It's what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's the weirdest disconnect. I'm like, did something get, did they try and film it and did it look shit? And they just went, all right, well, we'll have to have the bounty hunters there. And
bro, I think what they wanted is 40 years from now, they wanted two knobheads sitting on a sofa with a tiny toy poodle in the middle of it.
They're playing the long game.
Why the fuck they didn't shoot that thing?
4D chess.
Yeah, there you go. 4D chess.
4D chess.
That's what it is, man.
All right, you win, Critters.
This whole thing's based on a true story.
Fuck off. No, it isn't.
Yeah, it is.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, it is.
No, it isn't.
Dude, I can promise you.
Okay, you remember we covered it and we spoke to Kyan Kim, one of the stars of the film.
Yeah.
Cocaine Bear.
Yes.
That's a true story.
Yes, it is.
Right. I can only imagine that a dealer left a bag of fent somewhere about.
No.
And some possums rolled in it.
Nope.
And then the fent possums.
Bro.
Just no.
The Cocaine Bear thing. There was drug smuggling plane dropping bags of cocaine
into
the forest.
Yeah.
The bear's real. It's been stuffed. It's like on display.
When we covered it, it ate all the thing. It's been stuffed.
Are you on about this being the raccoon?
Is this
in comparison to Cocaine Bear? This is the bear is dealing cocaine. It's fucking insane.
It's
ridiculous.
Tell me.
Okay, cast your mind back to 1955.
Oh, I remember. Yeah,
smack bang in the middle,
in black and white. Yeah,
between the small town of Kelly and the small town of Hopkinsville.
Okay.
USA.
Ooh.
In the middle.
Yep.
Tiny little farmhouse, right? So 1955. This is it's a famous UFO encounter, alien encounter.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Cool, called, sorry. Based on a true bullshit. Yeah, lovely.
Called the Kelly-Hopkinsville encounter.
No.
Well documented.
Wow, they were
actually one of the most famous cases because of how well documented it is, because the law enforcement actually did get involved in it.
Right.
For the wrong reasons, but I'll get into it. So in 1955, near the towns of Kelly and Hopkinsville, Kentucky, USA, two farming families claimed that they were attacked by small, aggressive creatures they believed came from a UFO. Are you ready for the McPherson crossover?
Oh my God,
are you ready for
this?
So that night, five adults, two children, were trapped in a farmhouse while Elmer Sutton and Billy Ray Taylor took the lead in defending the group in a fight against tiny, inhuman creatures.
Right. No, Ben.
Earlier that evening, Taylor had seen a shooting star fall from the sky, land behind the tree line, behind the house. When he and Sutton went to investigate, they spotted a strange creature and rushed back inside the house.
Right.
Marking the start of a terrifying 3-hour ordeal. The beings, so that's the McPherson crossover, you know what I mean? Okay. They go and investigate a crash thing, they run back to the farmhouse, and then they start getting tormented. All sounding familiar.
Yeah.
Oh. The beings, described as having glowing red eyes and clawed hands, repeatedly attacked the house, peering in the windows, and even grabbed at Taylor's hair, which we see in this film. Despite firing numerous shots at what they estimated were 12 to 15 creatures, none appeared harmed. Once the families saw an opportunity, they fled to the police station. They all jumped in a truck. I imagine at least six of them were in the flatbed at the back. Right,
yeah.
Because this is
or it's a big...
It's Kentucky. American,
everything's bigger. No, it's Texas.
Yeah, that's Texas. That's not Kentucky, you fucking racist.
Right, okay, yeah.
Jesus,
no. I know the Kentucky.
Kentucky, chicken.
Yeah, I was going to... Is that the state slogan?
Yeah.
Texas. Everything's bigger in Texas. Kentucky. Chicken.
I'm really cultured. All right? I feel like I should write slogans for places, because they wouldn't just be quasi-racist. They would be completely uneducated and ill-founded.
Well, good news is, it's United We Stand, Divided We Fall.
Chicken.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, there you go. So despite firing numerous shots, the estimated 12 to 15 creatures, none were harmed. Once the family saw an opportunity, they fled to the police station, reporting the incident in full. Concerned about the potential gun violence between local citizens.
Yes, of course.
Authorities took the report seriously. 4 police officers, 5 state troopers, 3 deputy sheriffs, and 4 military police from a nearby army base searched the scene.
Oh, they were well up for this. They were like, oh my God, we get to use our stuff. Let's go.
Exactly. Dude, it's 55.
Bobby, get the tank.
What are all these? Cletus, fence my boomstick.
Oh, God. Time is a flat circle.
Right?
Yep, right.
They found no evidence of creatures.
Yep.
But they did discover bullet holes in trees, walls, and doors.
Yes, I imagine they would.
Evidence.
That people had been firing at hallucinations.
Of an intense firefight.
Yeah.
Not hallucinations, Rob. Aliens.
Aliens, all right.
They wanted their chicken.
Right, okay. Let me put it this way.
Go on.
If I told you that story,
yeah,
but I had said ghosts,
yeah,
would you be compelled to think that they were ghosts?
No. You tell me that story about aliens, I believe you 100%. I believe you 100%.
Right. So it's based on a true bullshit. That's fine. Mm-hmm. That is fine. We've covered one of the films by these, what are they called? The Cholo Brothers? The Chodo Brothers? The Chode Brothers.
Chodo Brothers.
The Chode Brothers.
Kyoto Brothers? Chodo Brothers?
The Kyoto Brothers.
I don't fucking know, man.
Right. Okay. We've covered one of their films before.
Did you say Cholo Brothers?
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure that was on the internet forever.
Okay. what's this? Cholo's like a deep fried
donut. That's a churro.
Okay.
Cholo's a Mexican gangster.
Okay. Maybe.
I'm going to Google it.
Okay.
Is Cholo racist?
Is Cholo racist?
What is a cholo?
If it's this fried donut, I get 50p.
A young man belonging to a Mexican-American urban subculture associated with street gangs.
Okay. There we go. Okay, so...
And then the Google's example sentence, a reformed cholo turned fitness guru. What the fuck is that?
Okay, so not the Chiro brothers, but these guys... We guested on, I can't remember whose podcast it was. We talked about Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Horror Hangout. No offense, boys.
And I was pointing out that all of Killer Clowns from Outer Space is an allegory for right-wing immigration fears.
Yeah.
I think it's them. I think it's the Cholo brothers. I think they're
Stop
a bit
saying
hung
Cholo
up.
Brothers. Chiodo. We're going to stick with Chiodo.
Okay. Chiodo brothers.
There you go.
We've seen Chiodo brothers before. And they love a small town being terrorized by people. Now, in Killer Clowns, it's small town liberals being clowned on by people who are like, oh,
by
you triggered
authority figures. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
In this one, it's intergalactic invaders.
Yeah.
I think the Chiodo brothers might have a bit of a fixation.
Killer Clowns are intergalactic invaders.
Yeah, exactly. I think they'd be wearing red hats now if they could, is all I'm saying.
Mm, I don't know.
No?
I
mean, I know nothing about the Chiodo brothers.
Kind
of. Right, okay. Kinda.
Their involvement in this film was a little different to Killer Clowns. So Killer Clowns, they directed, did all the
Oh, right, okay, that was 100% them.
It was them. So that was, like, their things, you know what I mean?
That was their masterpiece.
Fucking damn right it was.
Yeah, it was
incredible.
Okay.
The special effects for Critters was Chiodo Brothers,
yep,
of Killer Clowns fame.
Yeah.
And their crew of a dozen artists. They were brought on to make creature puppets and handle all of the special effects just for this, right? $100,000 of the budget was dedicated to the practical effects.
Okay.
That was it.
That's fuck all.
And the time was insane. They had, normally this is like a months long project.
Yeah, yeah.
They were given weeks.
What?
To do everything. And it was being changed at the drop of a hat. Oh, by the way, can you just make this? Oh, by the way, can you just make this? And they're like, yeah, cunt. But it takes time to sculpt, right, set, and then make out of materials.
At a certain point, latex needs time to cure.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it does.
I've got 3 days. Exactly. I can make one thing. Pick
so,
it.
Yeah, exactly. But these guys were smart about it. The script demanded 8 critters, right? So just 8 of them. The budget and the time didn't allow for more than 4 of the hero puppets, is what they're calling it.
Yeah, on-screen used.
On-screen used
for close-ups, yeah.
So to resolve this, the brothers developed a series of prosthetic appliances, such as scars.
Just one puppet, and then they can just...
4 puppets.
4 puppets, and then they can modify them.
And then they had scars, deformed facial features, hairy eyebrows, squinted eyes, and they could just swap them out. So each puppet was now 2 puppets,
or 2 characters. Nice.
Which is amazing. So whenever there was more than 4 critters that are seen in the same shot, stunt puppets are used in the background, which is essentially the non-face. It's just a balled up critter or whatever the fuck it is. Other than the hero and stunt models, a number of puppets with specific functions were also built. So critters that rolled onto themselves, like remote control. Remote control rolling ball critters.
They must have had some like good mouth ones and like stuff like that.
Critters that could shoot venomous quills. They had to be made so that they fired the quills, which I thought was fucking awesome. And a special puppet whose cheeks could puff up and its chest would inflate.
Oh, for the when it eats the bomb. Yeah. That looked mad dangerous, to be honest. That looked like I wouldn't want to be anywhere near that.
Okay, so each puppet has got 3 or 4 puppeteers.
Mm-hmm.
And in that scene, it's on a mezzanine in a barn. Right.
So on
the top floor, there is one little tiny puppet. And underneath a very thin wooden floor, there is 4 people actively controlling this tiny little puppet that picks up a cherry bomb, puts it inside of it. Yeah. And then the cherry bomb explodes. They have to do the eyes and all this stuff. And then fake it's dead. There's a good little story from the Chiodo brothers where they're like, the puppeteers who are handling the puppets in every scene are doing things in a certain way, but they are doing them blind.
Yeah. And they can't see. They're on the floor down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the director was directing the puppets and not the puppeteers. So everyone was getting very frustrated in the fact that, like,
dude, I can't see.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yeah, but can you just do it a little bit? Can you just do it a little bit to the left? And they're like, cunt, there's 4 of us.
Right.
And we're blind.
Who's left?
Yeah. What are we doing?
You need to tell us in Braille, motherfucker.
This is what I'm saying, man. I'm going to learn Braille. Like, it's going to be amazing. I'm going to try.
I say that. You learn Japanese.
Right?
Right.
But since most of the puppets didn't have functional legs, a special walking critter was also devised. Other puppets included hand puppets used for the biting scenes, stunt puppets that could be thrown like a football by an actor.
Yeah, yeah.
To portray the leader critter,
right,
it was bigger than the others. It was 26 inches.
Grows a lot.
Yeah, so that one, when it grows, is that. And then, as an extremely late assignment, the brothers were also asked to build a 4-foot-tall suit to be worn by a little person. The suit was only intended to be seen in quick cuts, but it was actually featured prominently in the film's finale. And then the Chiodo brothers
really
say,
is.
They didn't give us time or money to do it. The costume was just a quick throwaway thing. They wanted to show something big. It looked all right, but there were no mechanics budgeted for the face. It didn't move at all. So this is where, like, it sort of lives and dies with them. They had a great fun, like, getting involved in it, but there was budget, the time constraints, everything about it meant that they were, like, fucking restricted as anything. But with that in mind, they were mad restricted, arguing with the director.
It looks incredible.
Who was directing the fucking puppets instead of the puppeteers.
Look, for the budget
and
the time constraints, this is an incredible film.
Masterpiece.
Without the budget and the time constraints, it's a good film.
Yeah.
But once you know about the fact that they had only 2 million in a couple of weeks.
Exactly.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
I feel like I have to be grateful to this film and to Killer Clowns from Outer Space, because without it, we would not have had the comedic genius that is Team America, because the same Chiodo Brothers,
yeah,
were the lead puppeteers on Team America.
They were.
And I only found that out. Now, I'd never once gone, who actually did the puppeteering on that?
Because
I'm just not into puppets.
Yeah, same.
You meet people that are into puppets, and you don't want to know.
You don't see them again.
No, exactly. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. What's your favorite? Puppets, cool. Yeah.
What's your favorite pastime? Puppeteering? Mint. See you later.
Bye.
See you later. Right. It's fucking amazing. But no, the Chiodo Brothers are incredible. They made this whole film work on like fuck all money.
Yeah.
And, you know, nothing's wrong with. But what we ended up with was this gorgeous addition to ridiculous B-movie horror comedy sci-fi. That
totally.
Just...
I feel like we're in latter-day Marvel at the moment, right?
Sure.
We've had 20 years of it.
Hasn't a new one just come out?
Yeah.
Thunderbolts, whatever the fuck it is.
Apparently it's supposed to be the best one since whatever. But they say that about every single one that comes out. And then a year later, they're like, that one was shit, wasn't it? Right? So where we are now with Marvel is where Critters kind of sits in the 50s sci-fi invasion timeline. And I feel like small town, spaceship comes, causes peril for the local community, and is later banished, is a 50s sci-fi plot that by the time it came out would have been so incredibly boilerplate that it's a bit like, oh, yawn.
Yeah.
It is that, but removed from its context and watching it today, it's a wonderful place to visit if you're in the mood for a 50s sci-fi.
1,000%.
But with an 80s spin.
Yeah.
It's a lovely little thing. It's a lovely little gem. It's got some bizarre moments in it. It's got Billy fucking Zane in it. What's Billy Zane doing in this movie?
He's loving life. That's what he's doing.
Billy Zane is one of those celebrities who I've always... He's a named celebrity, right?
Yeah.
He's one of those people. People say, oh, Billy Zane's in this film.
Yeah.
I have no idea why we do that. All I could tell you that Billy Zane has been in is Titanic. Oh, sorry, there's not more.
Yeah, okay.
Right?
Fair.
Right?
Fair.
But every time I see Billy Zane, I go, oh, Billy Zane's in this. Why do I do that?
Okay.
Why do I care?
Dude, Billy Zane has been in like a chunk of Uwe Boll movies as well. I love him. I love him.
But he's, I love him.
Yeah, he's B-movie royalty. B-movie royalty.
Okay, fair.
Fucking
fair,
Lynn Shay's in this, mate.
No, she's not.
She
is.
She's the fucking...
She's the...
Radio operator.
Radio operator.
At the police station.
Oh, for the Lynn Shay.
For the Lynn Shay. That meme did great, didn't it? But Dee Wallace. Dee Wallace, the fucking... She is the...
Right, you say... Sci-fi again, mom. She is sci-fi mom, but for E.T. And I just... It's just the tip.
It is just the tip. Do you want to play a game?
I'm so wet for a game. Get me a game.
All right, give me 1 second because I'm going to have to load this game up because I found it.
Right.
Whilst I was at work. I've not had a chance to do it yet.
Let me guess. 84 questions on your Critters knowledge spanning the whole franchise of which we've only seen one.
I think it might be 15 questions on 80s horror movies.
Okay. Hit me with 5.
I'm just going to start the quiz and we're going to speed run it. All right.
Okay.
How many movies in the Friday the 13th franchise were released in the 1980s? 4, 5, or 8?
4.
8.
Fuck off. Oh my god, Freddie Starr was busy.
In the bin.
He didn't have time to eat a hamster.
In the bin. Which film's violence sparked changes to the Motion Picture Association of America's rating system? Poltergeist, Gremlins, or The Beyond?
Oh, The Beyond. It can't be the other two. It can't be Gremlins or Poltergeist.
Gremlins.
What?
Who starred in
Who
starred in the 1980s, the Shining film adaptation from the Stephen King book? Tom Selleck, Harrison Ford, or Jack Nicholson?
Jack Nicholson.
There we
go. If I didn't know that, I'd have to quit.
I'm answering these questions right out because when I'm saying them, I'm clicking the right answer. Yeah. I've not clicked yours.
I'm trying to look in your braille. I'm trying to look in your braille sunglasses.
Stop copying me.
Just enough for the city, brother.
Which horror film did Sam Raimi write and direct? The Fly, Creepshow, Evil Dead.
Evil Dead.
I know, easy.
We've covered it.
There you go. How many Puppet Master movies? You're not going to get this.
What?
How many Puppet Master movies followed the original, which was released in 1989? Was 9, 5, or 3?
Here's the thing. If you meet someone with puppets, you don't go to meet them another 9 times.
Do you not?
But I'm going to say it's 9.
You're going to say it's 9 because it is 9.
Yeah, because people that love puppets love themselves some fucking puppets.
That's what I'm saying, man. They're gonna cash in on that shit.
Yeah.
In Gremlins, what substance caused adorable Mogwais to turn into terrifying angry monsters? Blood, chewing gum, or water?
Fent.
I'm clicking water. How does a devastated father bring his son back to life in Pet Sematary?
He buries him in the Pet Sematary.
Does he hire a witch? Does he use a defibrillator? Or does he bury his son in a Pet Sematary?
Buries his son in a pet cemetery.
Yeah, that's right.
Pet cemetery featuring a witch.
Yeah. How many A Nightmare on Elm Street movies were released in the 1980s? 3, 5, or 6? The Wait. House that Freddy built. New Line Cinema.
3.
Freddy Star. You going to click 3?
5.
It was 5. Which city is a focal point of City of the Living Dead? Los Angeles, New York City, or Sacramento?
Sacramento.
New York City.
Oh, damn it.
I'm clicking. My answer's not yours. I'm so sorry. I've got no context of how many you've got right or wrong in a minute.
Right, okay.
Halloween 2 was released in 1981. How many years after the first Halloween movie? 3, 4, or 5?
5.
3.
Fuck.
Rob.
I've only seen the first one and it wasn't for me.
Was it 5 years before 1981?
I don't know. I watched it once.
In which movie does one of the primary characters proclaim, "They're here"?
Oh, Poltergeist.
There you go.
Move into the light, Sherilyn. It's why I call every moth is Sherilyn.
Yeah.
Because I turn all the lights off, I put my phone light on and I try and lead them out of the house. Yeah, and I go, Sherilyn. And it sometimes works.
Critters endured script changes so that it wouldn't seem to be a knockoff of what other Hollywood production?
Gremlins,
Day of the Dead, or The Lost Boys?
Do you know why I know the answer to that question, Ben?
Go for it.
Because of this podcast, and this, dear listener, is why you should listen to us every week.
Exactly. See, it's almost like I've timed it exactly so that the last question of this quiz was tied into our episode, wasn't it?
In a bowl.
So next question, what franchises earn the most money at the box office? Halloween, Friday 13th, or Nightmare on Elm Street?
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Friday the 13th.
Really?
Yes.
That surprises me.
That's upsetting that you said that to my face.
Okay, right. Because, I mean, I thought, obviously this is the worst one. I thought it would...
Oh, fuck it. I swear to God. In the bin. There are so many more questions.
Let's just count where we're at. Where are we at, Ben? How did I win the quiz?
Yeah.
How many of those did I get right?
Some.
Yay!
Some right.
I'm a
Good
winner.
Good job, buddy.
Mummy was right.
I'm fucking glad.
What are you rating, Critters?
I'm gonna go for an 8.
It's a celebrate an 8.
I'm going to celebrate an 8.
Right. What are the 2 points it loses? Because we've talked a lot about why you love it. What are the 2 points that...
It's not lost anything. I just think that it peaked at an 8. When I saw it for the first time, I was like, that is a great film. Is it a perfect film?
No.
It is a great film. And it's just... it's stayed there. It's it's a fucking creature feature at heart, which I'm... You know, I love and adore.
That's your bag.
That's my bag. It's sci-fi. The sci-fi element of it is played completely straight.
Mm-hmm.
It's witty writing. Keeps it on like the right side of self-aware and in on the jokes that it's making.
Totally.
It's just fucking awesome. It's a great way to spend the night in front of the VCR. You know what I mean? What are you rating it?
I'm going to go 7.
Okay.
I like it. Yeah. It's great. It's not a genre that that I have the deep nostalgia for that you do.
Okay.
So I come at it much more from like a kind of guy on the street perspective.
Yeah.
And if I was going to recommend a creature feature or like an 80s comedy horror,
yeah,
would this be my first pick? No.
Ooh.
So it's a 7.
Okay. I think that's it, buddy.
That's it, babe.
I think that's it, man. That's the end of the show. We love you all dearly.
Thank you so
fucking much for hanging out with us. Thank you for your support. It means the absolute world.
Now go tell your friends about it.
Go tell your mates.
Tell them how fun it is.
Get them in here.
Ben is going to thank you for spending the... hour of your
I've
week.
I've got fuck all for this. I haven't prepped
it's
anything.
Good. This is perfect.
Where's...
Because he's going to wrap up the thoughts, themes, and feelings of this movie into a little Monday motivational pep talk. So I can just tell you to consume.
Feel like the message that this film was released with. You know what I mean? They're coming to take your jobs. They're coming to take your farmhouse. They're coming to take your daughters. That's a big one. I think that we've moved on enough from that now. So we're not in a state where, you know, people are paranoid about China or Russia or someone coming over to the States and taking your jobs because, well, I mean, they kind of are. You know what I mean? Maybe this is still true today.